KTOO Public Media would like to acknowledge the Tlaine Di and the Woosh Kitan of the Akkwan. We are on their ancestral homeland. Our broadcast studios are built on fill that was once tideland and part of what is called the Indian Village. We recognize those families who traveled to and from their homes from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and whose children played on the beaches and learned to row in the harbor. The families of the Juneau Indian Village, like their ancestors, cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront. KTOO is working to lift up Tlingit voices through the sharing of stories like these and the broadcast of the Tlingit language. Please excuse us for our mistakes and good ashish for your patience as we learn.
Hansen Grass, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, where Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka Kay Jin Talk Anakaya Haanikuk.
You're tuned in to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my first guest today is Libby Bacalar, attorney and author of the popular social media platform One Hot Mess Alaska. Hello, Libby.
Hi, how's it going?
Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So I follow you on Twitter, like thousands of others. So even though I've never talked to you before today, I feel like I know you. Do you get that a lot?
I do get that a lot, and I love that. And actually, that's kind of one of my favorite things about being so active on social media is, you know, all the people that I've met and connected with through those platforms. So I'm happy that you feel like you know me, because that's sort of the goal of my whole shtick.
So today you're here to preview your Evening at Egan presentation. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you some more about One Hot Mess, a.k.a. As I mentioned, I follow you. You actually have over 6,500 followers, which is impressive. So I just would love to know, how did it all begin?
So that's on Twitter. I have like 11,000 on Facebook. And it all began with just little status updates I would do for my friends. And my best friend from childhood said, you know, you really should start a blog. And this was in 2014, where blogging was a little bit more of a thing, I guess. And so I started a blog mostly about parenting and lifestyle stuff, food, music, fashion, just kind of childhood stories. It wasn't too political, actually, at all at first. And it just kind of snowballed from there. People, I think, connected with it, related to a lot of the topics I was talking about. And I mostly did sort of longer form blog posts then. Now I do, you know, one or two of those a month maybe, and kind of am more just a prolific tweeter and Facebooker at this point. I've been doing it for about 6 years, and I've had a lot of fun with it, and met a lot of, like I said, a lot of interesting people, and a lot of cool opportunities have come from it for me.
So how would you describe it for someone who has never read your post before?
So it's sort of like, I don't know how you would describe it exactly. It's sort of like a general interest humor. I would call it a humor mommy blog. And now it's sort of taken a political-ish turn since the ascension of Trump. You know, I hadn't really blogged about, I guess, politics too much. But around 2015, when Trump started his ascendancy to power, I was kind of aghast, because I grew up in New York City and I kind of knew what his whole deal was, and I just kind of couldn't believe what was happening. And so I started to, you know, blog more about that situation. And then I kind of became a little bit of my blog sort of took a social justice turn, I guess. And I became more comfortable talking about some of those issues. And I think as, you know, we sort of, as a country, I would say descended into where we are now. I kind of started to, in many ways, blog about current events, social justice issues, take some irreverent takes on various national things that were happening around the country. And, you know, folks, I think for the most part, some people related to that, some people loved it, some people hated it. I would say my blog and Twitter account are sort of like cilantro or the Grateful Dead. Either you love it or you hate it. So some people hate it and don't want anything to do with it, but the people that like it really like it. So I always try to be, you know, authentic and use my voice as honestly as possible and kind of call things as I see them. And I say a lot of things I think people are thinking but don't really want to say or have the platform to say necessarily. And so I take that pretty seriously. And I enjoy that responsibility at this point.
I think it's safe to say that everyone has had both positive and negative experiences on social media, and you also have so many followers and your account is public. How do you deal with all the interactions or fallout that might come after a post?
So I try to be respectful. I have certain rules of engagement that I try to follow. I really don't engage much with individual fighting or back and forth with the comments very much. Occasionally something will bait me. Occasionally I'll get into it a little bit, but I don't spend much time interacting. It's more of a performative thing. I'll post and then I'll just sort of, you know, I'll maybe see the comments, or I don't really get into them a whole lot. It's like, here's what I have to say. I'm going to let this speak for itself. I don't really think my stuff is exactly controversial because I do try very carefully to not ever insult an individual private citizen. Oh, I do plenty of insulting of public officials, but not individual private citizens. I certainly, you know, never mock anybody's appearance or, you know, any sort of, I try to steer clear of like look below the belt kind of trolling type of content. I try to keep it edgy and humorous and aimed at, you know, public figures that I think deserve to be excoriated mostly. And occasionally I make mistakes and slip up, and, you know, occasionally there's a fine line between funny and mean, and funny is subjective, of course. And, you know, it can be, things can get a little edgy, but I have developed a very thick skin about the fallout and feedback I get. I've had some scary things happen, some stalker type people, some, you know, pretty frightening trolls and things like that. But for the most part, you know, it's been positive. I got just as many positive comments and feedback from people as I do negative stuff. And I try not to let either side of that either inflate my ego or deflate my courage too much one way or the other.
When you went to law school, did you ever see yourself becoming a blogger someday?
Yeah, no, not at all. Actually, it was totally organic the way the blog happened and started. And it was not, I did not expect it to kind of take off to the extent that it did. But it became sort of both a hobby and kind of a therapy thing for me. I've never done it as a job. I've never made any money off of it. I don't have any ads or sponsored content or anything like that. It's always been strictly a hobby, and my law practice is its own separate thing. You know, obviously there was future intersection of those arenas, which is part of the subject of my Evening at Egan thing. But really my blogging was a hobby, and it was kind of a world apart from my work life. And so the two didn't really intersect. To the extent they intersect, it's now it's just that my legal education, I think, informs a lot of civic stuff that's going on right now with respect to our democracy and the election and that kind of thing. But there's nothing specifically, you know, work related at all that overlaps with my blog.
So that might be a good segue into talking about the Evening at Egan presentation this Friday, 7 p.m. Your presentation is titled Speech Advocacy and the Constitution in the Age of Social Media. What are some of the things you plan to cover in your talk?
So this is going to be a little bit of a variation on a talk I gave at the LUSAC Library back in January in Anchorage called the Tundra Talks. And it's going to be a lot of Q&A, I think, mostly because I like to have dialogue more than I like to have like lecture, and I don't have a PowerPoint or anything like that. Mainly what I'm going to start talking about, the Constitution, sort of, and the First Amendment and what the First Amendment says and a little bit of its history and kind of, you know, what it guarantees and sort of where we are with it now. And then I'll probably, you know, go into telling my personal story, some of what we've talked about here this afternoon, and how I haven't been able to, I've been very good about keeping my mouth shut about things that I care about and things that I think are important. And I've certainly always gotten in trouble with my writing and my talking my whole life. And I'll probably just kind of outline some of that. And then I'll get a little bit into what happened with me at the state, the transition of the Dunleavy administration, and that sort of the way I was targeted for exercising my First Amendment rights. And, you know, that's now a subject of litigation. But I think the overall theme is going to be kind of how important it is for us to use our voices and our time. Those are really the only two tools that we have to deal with what we're doing and what we're going through right now. I mean, I think everyone who's gone through a government upheaval says the same basic things. They all say you have to use your voice and you have to push back. And, you know, there isn't one sort of movie Jerry Bruckheimer type moment of action. You know, these things happen slowly. Daily life goes on. Sometimes it affects you personally, sometimes it doesn't. But when there is government upheaval, it's very mundane, actually, in a lot of ways. And it can be wearing and make you weary to try to push back against it, but it's very important to do that. And so I think using your time, using your voice, and having the courage to do that, those are the tools we have that are the only rebuke to fear and to suppression by the government of free speech. So that's one of the things my talk is going to focus on, just to encourage people to do that right now, because those rights and a lot of our norms are under attack right now. And so if the Constitution is not like, you know, some immune sort of natural process, it's just a document, it's just a contract that we all made up. And if we don't assert our rights, then it's like they don't exist in the first place. So that's kind of where I'm going to go with the talk. And then I'm hoping to have more of a dialogue with folks about, I guess, a little bit of current events and using time and voice in ways that matter.
And what do you wish that Alaskans would use their time and voices to speak about? What are some of the most important issues, in your opinion?
Well, I think for me, The three big ones are racial justice. You know, is a huge issue for me. It's something I really care about, and I think it's very important, especially for a person who has white skin, to use their privileges to lift up Black and Indigenous voices. That's something I really care about and try to do. I try to be an ally to the LGBTQ community. I try to use my voice for that. I don't always succeed in being a perfect ally, but I try very hard, and I take criticism of my allyship in stride. So that's one. And then, of course, just the denigration of the Constitution as a whole that's happening, I think, under this administration right now, the threats to our electoral system from the president, the threat that he's making not to peacefully leave office, the things that he's saying that are just not normal. And there's value in calling them out as not normal and not okay. And I think there aren't enough forceful voices necessarily saying, like, look, this is not normal, this is not okay, this is not politics anymore, this is a constitutional this is an abdication of constitutional obligations by these branches of government, this is a human rights violation issue, these are not just quote unquote politics as that word has been understood. And so I think it's important to make a record of that for history. Even if it doesn't lead to anything, there's value in my mind to just talking about it and putting it out there and saying, this is not normal, this is not okay, and I am not going to just stand by and say nothing while these things happen. So I don't know if that answers your question.
I think that's a great answer. So thank you so much, Libby. Libby Bacalar, this Friday's evening at Egan Speaker. It begins at 7 p.m. via Zoom, and you can register at uas.alaska.edu/EganLecture. I'm really looking forward to hearing your talk. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience today?
I don't think so. I just hope people register and come to the talk, and I'm really looking forward to the evening.
Well, thank you very much again, and I hope you have a great presentation on Friday.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.